avoid the suffering that led me to my crime. Whatever happened to no good deed goes unpunished? My old best friend Paige used to tell me to count down the days until my 18th birthday. We would make plans to leave, get away from our families. But when my birthday approached, I swiftly realized it was wishful thinking. It didn't matter that I was now an adult. I was trapped forever. I resigned myself to that fact, learning to numb everything, the good and the bad. These were the cards I was dealt, and it was my responsibility to deal with it. When Paige was murdered by her brother, I promised her cold body that I would get out before I ended up like her. And God knows, I fucking tried. I really, really tried. I don't think people realize just how strong your bond is with your favorite chosen person. And to lose them, it's something you never recover from. She was the only person on this earth who understood and knew what I was going through. Being with her, it was the only time I didn't feel alone. When she was taken from me, I knew right then and there, I would be alone forever. No loving family, no more friends. The kids at school just laughed at me as a teen, thinking everything was a huge joke. Fuck, if only Paige could see me now, she'd be rolling in her grave. I'm more trapped than I ever was. And still, no one cares enough to give me freedom. I envy Paige. She got her freedom, just not the type we had hoped for. But at least she's not here, surrounded by screaming lunatics wishing for death. Cold-ass soggy food and footsteps? I'm ripped from my train of woeful thoughts by the sound of footsteps outside my room. I could be losing it, but they aren't the guard's footsteps. There's no heavy padding of steel-toed boots or dead silence besides their movements. I can hear laughter, jeering. Creeping up to the door, I press my ear against the metal, trying to hear anything distinct. I could be fucking mental, but I swear I hear Vivian's voice. What the ever-loving fuck? The voices fade away with the sound of footsteps, leaving nothing but silence again. It's definitely past bedtime, so no one should be out of their rooms, not even for duty. I decide right now that I am, in fact, going fucking insane, and crawl back into bed, the mattress making my back itch. There's no way people would be out of bed, pacing the hallways like normal young adults without a care in the world. We're in hell. There's no heaven here. It's an odd day with no professional appointments, so I relish the time before class. As usual, I'm stuck next to Gray in Charmaine's class, his relaxed posture looking out of place as he watches her pace the front of the class. His eyes follow her movements, a faint smile on his face, like life is great. It's a nice change from having his attention, but I'm still on edge. He makes no effort to even glance at me the entire duration of the class, and when the SWAT team arrives to escort us to the hall, he's the first one out the door. Knowing the routine now, I follow the rest of the class out, mentally preparing myself for free time. I'm tempted to try my luck with the library, but terrified of crossing paths with Damon and Gray. As I approach the hall and spot the crowd, I briefly panic, wondering if I'm still in fucking group three, whatever that means. Today, it's not the usual guy climbing onto the tables to address us. It's Damon. My heart sinks, and I slip to the corner of the room, making myself as small as possible.
Holman!
Damon yells, obviously addressing someone.
We need to talk. The rest of you leave now.
Fuck me, I mutter, watching as everyone scatters out of the hall. It's another curveball to the so-called hierarchy that I can't seem to follow. How do they expect us to know what the hell to do when no one tells us the rules? I take off quickly to the library, not keen on being left behind to find out what's going on. Most people are vanishing towards the courtyard, and I warily check between the shelves when I enter the dusty room to make sure I'm alone. As far as I know, Damon was still on the table as I left the hall, so I think I'm in the clear. Finding the darkest aisle, I take refuge at the end, pressing my back against the wall. It's the last lot of shelves before the open table area, and I tuck myself into the corner, checking for spiders. It's so peaceful in here. I can only hear the faint chatter from outside the library. But otherwise, nothing. This was a good idea. A great idea, in fact. I close my eyes, trying to stop my mind from doing that thing where it wanders back to old memories. Instead, I create a new reality, one where I'm free, loved, and happy. I let myself stay there, picturing myself on a beach, hearing the waves crash against the shore. My skin is warm from the sun, the sand scratching into my legs as I stretch out on a beach towel. I'm on the verge of imagining a food van pulling up on the beach to deliver some decent fucking food when the library door smashes open, bouncing off the wall at the other end of the room. This was a terrible fucking idea. Curling my legs into my chest, I notice a gap in the bottom shelf behind me. I squeeze as much as my body in as possible, the sound of angry approaching footsteps making my heart race. There's multiple voices, all male, talking angrily. They don't bother to lower their tone, obviously not at all scared of being heard or seen. Through my knees, I watch as the group walk by the aisle, heading to the tables. I catch a small glimpse of a man being dragged, and I realize it's Vivian's friend.
"Put him there,"
I hear, immediately recognizing Damon's voice. There's a loud crash as I assume a body hits one of the tables forcefully. My eyes widen in panic, my body staying frozen while I look at my legs still partially hanging out of the shelves. Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck. Oh, fuck.
"Hallman, you piece of shit. You've had plenty of warnings and you still can't do as you're told,"
Damon snaps.
"God, it was just one fucking night. Give me a break,"
he pleads, managing to sound annoyed. I'd be fucking terrified. What an idiot. There's always a time and a place to know when you should shut yourself down. I hear another thud and I shiver, recognizing the sound of flesh hitting flesh. It happens again, and tears well in my eyes as memories flash before my eyes. I don't know whether to stay in the moment and listen to what's happening, or let myself drown in the memories. The groans of pain from Holman make it difficult to leave the room, and I know the choice has been made for me.
"I think he needs another reminder,"
comes a sing-song voice. Gray's voice floats through the library, chirpy as always. And it occurs to me now that I know why he didn't care about my presence today in class. It's because he was waiting for this.
Chapter 8. Gray. My heart races in excitement as I circle the crumpled-up loser on the floor. He can act all tough, but the little beads of sweat collecting on his forehead tell a different story. Then again, if I was on the receiving end of a Damon episode, I'd probably shit myself too. I watch as Lewis swings a kick toward Holman, laughing as it connects in his ribs. There's something funny about the sound of bruises being made. But still, it doesn't sit quite right. "Stand him up," I order, waving my hand at the others. "He should take this on his feet, like a man." Damon gives me an annoyed glance, obviously irritated that I just killed the flow of things. Lewis and Mark, however, pick Holman up, forcing him to his shaky feet.
"Why don't you just take over then?"
Damon snaps at me, folding his arms. "Ooh, can I?" I taunt. It makes it sound like he's doing me a solid for letting me play too, but we've got the good cop, bad cop gig down pretty well now. He secretly doesn't give a shit if I play too. I think it amuses him, though it would kill him to admit it. Holman gives me a pitiful look of hope.
"Buddy, come on. I got you those cigarettes last month."
They were stale," I moan dramatically. "Honestly, you said your outside contact was a good dealer."
"He is,"
he stutters quickly.
"I don't know what happened."
I shrug, bored. "Not my problem, Sam, and sales cigs are the least of your problems right now."
"Look,"
he pleads, holding his hands up.
"I wasn't thinking. Come on, you're a dude. You know what the urges are like, especially in here. We all have needs."
Damon scoffs, disgusted. I just raise an eyebrow, giving him a perplexed look. "Urges? When we say no fucking without permission, we mean it. You don't just bring your little girlfriend into our space. Your dick is not our concern, shoved into a blender for all I care. Wait a minute. I pause, turning to Damon. Can we get hold of a blender? He shrugs.
I can't see why not.
Wait!
Holman gasps.
Look, I was high and horny. Please don't touch my dick.
I muffle a laugh as Lewis and Mark loosen their grip on him slightly, obviously not wanting to be mistaken for accidentally going near his mini sausage. I think you should kiss my foot, I tell him, watching as horror crosses his face, followed by coerced consideration. Damon rubs his forehead, not impressed. Holman shakily gets onto his knees, shuffling towards me. No, no, I say, waving my finger at him like I'm scolding a child. On your hands and knees, like the good little boy you are.
Gray, don't make me lose my appetite.
I grab a chair, swinging it around. I sit down, slapping my knee like I'm summoning a dog. Here, boy. Holman crawls towards me, eyes burning hesitantly into my filthy feet. I may or may not have planned this, deliberately walking around barefoot to collect some delicious bacteria from the floors. This place never gets cleaned, so God knows what has grown in the cracks in the floor. Holding out my right foot, I wiggle my toes in front of his face. Right here, suck my toes. I burst out laughing when he puts my big toe into his mouth, gagging.
Okay, enough,
Damon says to me.
That's fucking disgusting.
Clutching my chest, I look at Holman, appalled. I agree. What type of person would suck someone's toes? His eyes widen in panic, fumbling over his words. I don't give him a chance to form a coherent sentence, my foot connecting with his throat as I kick him backwards. I have to give myself credit. That was a pretty good kick. He lands several feet back in the middle of the aisles, gasping wildly for air as he grabs his throat. His head turns to the side, and I notice he freezes, just for a split second, maybe less, before looking back up at the roof quickly. Interesting. Something down that aisle caught his attention. He's tried hard to hide it, but the tensing of his torso coupled with the brief pause is enough for anyone to pick up on if they know how to read body language. I've spent my entire life watching people from afar, call it my little social experiment. But I love observing people. It's fun to read people, learning what they think and feel, how their bodies react subconsciously to their surroundings. You can learn a lot about someone from just watching them, even if they try to hide it. Damon hasn't noticed, his body partially turned away. I think the toe sucking was enough to turn him off. Safe to say, foot fetish is not on his kink list. When the sack of shit on the floor stops gasping enough to allow us to think, Damon kicks his calf to draw his attention.
Break the rules again and I'll unleash Gray on you, with whatever fucking kitchen appliances he likes.
Without waiting for a reply, Damon steps over him, not bothering to miss his fingers as he squashes Holman's fat fingers under his shoe. Lewis and Mark follow him, the three of them pausing to look at me.
You coming?
Damon asks. I wave him ahead. I'll catch up with you soon, I just need to finish up here.
Whatever.
Damon replies, bored. The three of them disappear from the library, the door closing shut behind them. Walking over to Holman, I lean down, trailing my fingers along his chest. I really need to repaint my nails. They're getting chipped. Perhaps I should try red next time with a more natural substance. How many seconds do you think it takes for a human heart to stop beating after it's cut out with a carving knife? I ask him. Holman trembles, eyes glassy as the wimp fights back tears.
I don't know.
We're going to find out if you don't leave the library in the next 5 seconds. I grin at him. Credit to him, he probably fucks like a goldfish on carpet. But Christ, he can move quickly when he wants to. He scrambles away from me, bolting from the library, limping as he goes. My laughter follows him, hopefully haunting his mind. When the door stops swinging and fully closes, I turn my head to the side, noticing feet sticking out from the shelves. Well, what do we have here? Standing up, I stalk my way down the aisle slowly, watching as the feet scramble to hide, sensing the predator approaching. There's no room, though, the feminine legs flailing in panic. Reaching down, I grab the two ankles, dragging the body out from the tiny space in between the wall and the books. I stand over the now paralyzed body, my eyebrows raising in surprise. Well, hello, little killer. Have you been attending private meetings? Avery stares up at me, her stormy eyes jolty as she contemplates her next move. She's always so timid and frightened, and honestly, it makes my little black heart hurt a little. Who would be afraid of little old me? I lean over, locking eyes with her, and just when I think I have her all figured out, the feisty little thing kicks me square in the gut. I groan, stumbling back. It's unexpected, but frankly, I think I might be fucking in love with her.
Get the fuck away from me!
She snaps, jumping to her feet.
Take one step towards me and I'll saw your fucking balls off.
My eyes dance with delight hearing her tiny threat. I step towards her, watching as she freezes before moving backwards. It only takes 3 baby steps before her back is against the wall, her fingers pressing into it like she's trying to find something to clutch onto.
I mean it,
she says, but her voice trembles with empty promises. I hope so, I tell her, resting my hand next to her head as I cage her in. Avery stutters, the emotions flashing across her face faster than Hallman took off. Anger, fear, surprise, anger again, before finally resting on distress.
I heard nothing. I saw nothing.
I tisk at her, shaking my head. Now, now, my darling, we both know that's not true. I nearly crack up laughing when I spot the fire return in her eyes, the rare look of determination appearing.
Are you going to shove my dick into a blender?
She taunts angrily. Her stomach is sucked in against me, her attempt to make herself small, but all it's done is forced her into a tighter little space. I bring my hand up to her leg, my fingers brushing against her pale skin. She stills, terror flashing from behind her eyes. Interesting. Holding my hand still, showing her I'm not going any higher, I merely stroke her skin softly with my fingertips. We both know you don't have one, I tell her, smiling. Besides, you've been a good girl, right? She says nothing, her breath hitching slightly at my words. There's a slight change in her demeanor, her body language shifting. It's almost like a subtle plea of desperation. I have an inkling I know what it is. And it's fun to conduct scientific experiments, right? Leaning forward, I breathe in her scent. The faint smell of roses from this godforsaken place lingers on her skin, along with dust from the shelves next to us. She shivers when my breath touches her ear, my nose brushing against her earlobe. I bet you're a really, really good girl. I wait for it, a sense of victory rolling through me when she jolts ever so slightly against me. There it is, I think to myself, smirking. My girl likes a little praise. My guess is no one ever gave her any positive encouragement, so now she has no idea what to do with it, even though she obviously craves it. The thought of her craving me sends a shock of electricity straight to my cock, but I behave. There's no point rushing into these things. As much as I want to chase, the build-up and anticipation is so much better. Avery stills against me once more, back on guard. So I slowly pull back against my better judgment. She'll come to me when she's ready, and I'll be waiting. Best not to tell Damon you were here, I tell her, amused, watching as she starts to visibly relax.
I wasn't planning on it,
Avery replies, still gripping the wall. You can stay here for the rest of the break, but I'd probably try to find a better hiding spot. As small as you are, not even a toddler would be able to hide there. She grinds her teeth together.
I wasn't expecting anyone to come in here. Vivian said it's usually abandoned.
Laughing, my voice booms through the library, startling her. Is that what she told you? Avery nods, betrayal crossing her face as she once again realizes there's no allies in this place. At least not for her. She's right, I say, watching as confusion takes over. But Damon does prefer to utilize the quiet space in here, at least during the day. The nighttime, however, I trail off, realizing I've said too much. But if Avery is a smart cookie, she'll already be able to piece two and two together from our conversation with Hallman. I have to give her brownie points. Her face stays neutral, not giving much away. She's an interesting specimen. Damon was correct. She has very little control over her emotions at times, but then she'll be impenetrable like Fort Knox. It makes me want to learn more about her, find out why she's like this. If she's in Lilydale, it's for a reason. My guess is it's something to do with a parental figure based on her mental state, particularly with the lack of praise. Not to mention how much she hates me calling her little killer. I could almost take a guess at what the situation is, but I'd rather hear it from those pink lips one day. Avery stays silent, and I lean down, pressing a daring kiss to her temple. My eyes catch sight of the bandage on her arm. Another piece of the puzzle that will reveal itself later. She tenses up beneath me, but I don't say anything, just giving her a grin as I back away. You should be good for the remainder of free time in here today. Maybe just delay your visits to the library next time to make sure the coast is clear. But if you want to chat, you know where to find me. Her eyes shoot up in surprise, but I don't wait for a response, vanishing out of the aisle in the library. Damon will no doubt be wondering where I am. It's best not to mention this to him. Any part of it. He's not as forgiving as I am, and I'd hate to have to explain to him that I'm claiming her.
Chapter 9. Avery. I decide to avoid the library for free time after my encounter with Gray. I feel like I got lucky that day, but I doubt I'll be that blessed again. However, I do keep sitting with Theo at meal breaks, testing the waters. We never speak to each other. But I'm yet to be told I can't eat with him, and frankly, it's better company than the other options. People continue to stare like the two most fucked up people are on show for their pleasure. Dinner and a show. But we don't interact with each other. Hell, he doesn't even acknowledge my presence. We just eat, then I leave. It's a peaceful business interaction, and for that, I'm grateful. I'm starting to have my doubts that people leave this place completely rehabilitated. The days drag on, and I'm used to the routine, but profoundly wishing for death some days. Not suicide, just an end to my miserable existence. My sanity will not be intact one day. I'm not sure when it will happen, months from now, maybe years. Hell, it could even be next week. But all I know is that this place will be the end of me. I won't be saved. I won't be released into the community as some good sob story to bank money off. I'll just be dead or nothing. It's a waiting game. I stab the mushy potato on my plate, checking the contents. Today's option was some poor excuse for a hot meal. Mashed potatoes, gravy, and meat that looks like it's meant to resemble beef. Once again, I opted for the vegetarian option. And even then, I am concerned that the potato looks like it's laced with something inedible. Giving up, I decide I'll wait for the next meal to eat and take my chances. When I push back to get up, I accidentally collide with someone walking behind me, not bothering to check my surroundings.
Fuck's sake, watch it!
Someone sneers at me. I jolt around in a panic, eyes widening when I spot Vivian's friend. Sam, I think. Sorry, I mumble, leaning closer to the table, even though he has plenty of room to move around. For a moment, I wonder if he remembers seeing me in the library. Our eyes had briefly met, but he looked away so fast that I couldn't be certain. Except now, as he sneers down at me, hatred on his face, I'm almost certain that he did. He's probably mad I was there and didn't get in trouble, or that I saw him get his ass kicked. Either way, it's a different hostility from before, and I'm under the impression he wants to make an exhibit out of me. My eyes scan the room, noticing the curious faces watching with amusement. I don't find the infamous leaders in here, and I suspect he knows that too. Theo is still sitting across from me, but his head is down, completely ignoring our exchange.
How much room does your fat ass need?
He yells at me, making me jump. Cringing, I try to de-escalate the situation quickly, growing increasingly uncomfortable as more eyes find us. I'm sorry, I offer again. It was an accident. Sam scoffs, laughing as some of his friends join him as backup.
Yeah, sure. You really think you can just waltz in here and do whatever you want? Be considerate of other people.
I'm not going to be able to talk my way out of this, so the best thing to do is leave. I climb over the bolted seat, reaching for my tray so I can return it to the dirty dishes pile next to the start of the food line. Assuming I'm making a bolt for it, Sam smacks his hand out, knocking my tray flying into the air. It lands with a bang on the hard floor, splashing mashed potato everywhere. I freeze, terrified as I try to figure out what to do. But my brain is nothing but static, panic flooding me as I become paralyzed with fear.
I said you need to be considerate. Now, clean up this mess before the higher-ups see and punish all of us.
Sam sneers, laughing as he pushes me to the ground in the mess. My knees slide in the potato pudding, tears welling up at the sheer embarrassment of it all. I don't move, though, infuriating him more.
Are you blind as well as dumb?
He says, shoving his middle finger into my shoulder roughly. When he realizes I'm not going to answer him, he makes a mocking sound to his friends before deliberately walking through the food and spreading it further. It's not long after that there's a siren, signaling the end of mealtime, and everyone gets up from their tables, moving around me to continue on. No one stops to help or even offer words of encouragement. And when I suddenly find myself alone in the hall, I finally jolt back to life. Shit, I mutter, holding back tears. I quickly scoop the potato up as best as I can, dumping it on the tray before discarding it with the other dirty dishes. When I head outside the hall, I jump when I spot a guard waiting for me. He looks at me with a bored expression, motioning for me to follow him. I'm still covered in food, but I follow silently, nearly losing my footing as I walk into Charmaine's classroom. Gray is already sitting at his desk, his face dropping to one of a serious look as he takes in my appearance. I don't glance at him directly, just taking my seat as I pray for the floor to open up and let me fall into a sinkhole. Despite his best attempts to get my attention, I tune him out, numbing myself to everything as I focus on the material in front of me, and thinking about Paige and where we might be in an alternate universe. I'm relieved to have my shower that afternoon, free of all traces of moldy food. Except when I return to my room a short while later. It takes a few moments for my brain to register that there's something different about my room. Nothing has been touched. Everything is still in the same place. But there is an addition to the room. I step closer to the desk, staring at the object that has been placed gracefully on a plucked rose. It's one of those occasions where I know what I'm looking at, but my brain hasn't quite caught up to the realization yet. Finally, it does. I let out a yelp, jumping backwards with wide eyes when it finally hits me. Inside of the rose is a severed finger, the skin a pale color as blood dribbles onto my desk. There's a fucking finger and a rose on my fucking desk. I'm not sure what's worse. The fact that there's an amputated finger, or the fact that someone has put it here in the 15 minutes I've been gone from my shower. This place is supposed to be impenetrable. Access codes and keys, not to mention the guards that are always lurking around. And yet, here we are. Just me and my extra digit. What do I even do? Do I raise the alarm? How would that conversation even go? I'm sorry, but while I was having a shower cleaning mashed potatoes from my knees, someone broke into my room somehow and put a severed finger on my desk inside of a rose. I'm going to be in so much trouble. They are going to think I did this. I'll be put in prison. Or worse, the entire facility will be punished because of me, and I'll be public enemy number one. It's nearly dinner time, and I know the guards will be back soon to collect me. I need to find a hiding space for this thing. Rushing into the little ensuite bathroom, I grab all the toilet paper I can find, wrapping the finger and rose inside. I shove it under my mattress before wiping the desk with some toilet paper and flushing it down the bowl. Scrubbing my hands, I do my best to act normal when the guard arrives, beckoning me to follow the group to the hall. I can barely control my face throughout dinner, keeping a close eye on the soggy meatloaf instead of making eye contact with anyone. Theo eats quietly in front of me, seemingly enjoying the usual quiet banter from his dinner companion. There's laughter and chatter throughout the hall as everyone eats, and I'm none the wiser to the events from earlier. Surely, if someone was missing a finger, we'd all know about it. But everything seems normal. Well, as normal as you can get in a place like this. Though there's one bout of laughter that rings out louder than the others, and I can feel my blood boil as it pierces my ears. That motherfucker.
Little killer. I like when you are fired up, but at least give me some warning.
Gray jokes when I slam him against the wall in the library. He looked pleasantly surprised in class when I handed him a note telling him to meet me in here. God knows what he was expecting, but something tells me it wasn't this. What the actual fuck is wrong with you? Are you for real psychotic? I bark at him, taking a step back. Gray raises an eyebrow, blinking.
Psychotic? Yes, as to what's wrong with me? You'll need a lengthy session with Dr. Smith for that information. We don't have enough time to cover it today.
I'm serious, I argue. Look, I get this whole hierarchy thing, but this was too far. Are you trying to dig my grave? I sigh exasperatedly, earning a puzzled look from Gray.
Dig your grave? What you on about, boo?
Laughing, I shake my head, questioning my sanity. Don't try to gaslight me. You put that in my room when I wasn't there. If they find it, I'm as good as gone. I pause, looking at him bewildered. Was that the plan? Do you want me gone from here?
Whoa, calm down, firecracker. Let's rewind and start from the beginning. You're talking more in riddles than usual. Who was in your room?
I stomp my foot, annoyed. You!
Me?
He repeats, pointing to his chest, laughing.
If I was coming for a visit, it would be to see you. I don't know if you've noticed, but I'm not really the subtle type.
My gaze scans him, checking for any signs of lies. I don't know him very well, but even now, there's a sincerity about him. He also hasn't given me a direct reason to hate him or mistrust him yet, besides the obvious psychotic tendencies. I grasp my head, pacing the library aisle. Fuck me. If it wasn't you, who was it? This is nuts. Maybe I'm going insane after all. Gray grabs me by my shoulders, pushing me into the shelf.
Calm your funny form. Stop speaking in tongues. What was in your room?
A finger, I whisper, gazing up at him. He observes my face, completely blank for a moment, before he bursts out laughing.
A finger?
Suddenly aware of how close we are, I push him backwards, creating some space between us. Yes, a finger. But if it wasn't you, it must have been Damon.
Chopping off limbs isn't really Damon's forte.
Gray shrugs, unfazed at my shove.
He's more of a break you mentally type of guy. Are you sure it was really a finger?
It was a fucking finger, Gray. Oh, God. If it wasn't you, and now you know. I trail off, panicking. Gray, sensing my anguish, holds his hands up.
Whoa, chill. I'm not going to tell anyone. It's a little funny, though.
I could punch him. I could actually hurt him. This is a huge problem, and he thinks it's the funniest thing ever. It's not funny, I say through clenched teeth. Do they check the rooms? How am I going to get rid of it?
Have you tried flushing it down the shitter?
It's probably like a fucking tampon, I snap. I've never tried flushing an appendage down the toilet, but something tells me it wouldn't work. Gray shrugs.
You'd be surprised.
Catching my horrified look, he waves me off.
Don't stress, I'll take care of it. Under your bed, you say?
I nod slowly. You'll take care of it? He grins, outstretching his arms like some type of showman.
Of course I will. But just remember, you'll owe me one. Chapter 10, Gray. I'm still laughing several hours later at the look on Avery's face when I told her she's going to owe me. You'd think I'd asked her to sacrifice her firstborn. It fills me with little bubbles of warmth that she came to me for help. Granted, she thought it was me slicing and dicing to begin with, but I digress. The real question is who is removing digits and leaving them as presents. I have to hand it to them, no pun intended, but I like their style. Unless they are doing it as some type of sinister plot against Avery, in which case they are going to have some problems. It's me. I'm the problem. I find Damon sitting in his room, making notes with what looks like a brand new notepad and pen. A gift from Arthur, I bet. You see, Damon and Arthur Whittingham go way back. I wouldn't call it the most amicable relationship, but it certainly helps our position here. I stand in the open doorframe, smiling when Damon's eyebrow raises up. He doesn't even glance up to know I'm here. He can just sense it.
What now, Gray?
He mutters, scribbling something down. It's a beautiful day. Shouldn't you be in the courtyard? I tease. He scoffs.
With the gen pop, I'd rather fucking choke to death.
I'm sure that can be arranged, I grin. But I think you'd rather be more interested in choking someone else. Damon sighs, putting the notepad down.
I'm not going to choke you, you sick fuck.
Nah, not me, I say, unfazed, waving my hand. I walk into his room, plopping myself on the end of his bed.
Then who?
He asks, getting annoyed that I've interrupted his quiet time. Reaching under his bed, I fish around, grinning when I find the barely touched cigarette packet. I help myself, pulling out a stick and lighting it with the Zippo he has stashed next to it. Have you noticed anyone missing anything? I ask, blowing a ring of smoke into the air. Damon snatches the packet from me, grabbing his own cigarette out.
I don't have the patience today for your games, Gray. Spit it out.
A dear friend of mine had a present in their room. A finger. He pauses, cigarette poised between his fingers.
A fucking finger?
I nod. Just a casual courting gift. I'm going to deal with the appendage, but I'm trying to find the owner first. You know, to figure out if it was a self-present or one taken. Damon rubs his temple, the end of the cigarette awfully close to his hair.
Fuck's sake, I just want one day where people aren't doing weird-ass shit. It's not completely out of the possibility that people are just mutilating themselves, but Arthur said no more contraband. Who is your friend?
I bite my bottom lip, running through the 16 ways this conversation could go. Before I have an answer as to the safest route, Damon slams his free fist on the bed.
Oh, fuck's sake, Gray. It better not be who I think it is.
What? I gasp innocently. You don't even know who I'm referring to. I could be talking about myself. I'm very popular, you know. Damon rolls his eyes.
Save me the theatrics. It's the new girl, isn't it? You've been infatuated with her since she arrived. If it was anyone else, you'd be waving them off and turning a blind eye.
That's not true. I'm very hands-on. Get it? Hands-on?
Go fuck yourself. I'm in no mood for your puns today.
I patted him. What's got your panties in a twist today? The change of subject goes well. Damon leaning back against the wall, kicking his legs out.
Holman is banned. In turn, we need to ban his posse, at least for a period until they learn not to fuck with the rules.
So they need replacing, I ask. He nods.
And to be fair, there's no one at the acceptable level. We're going to be short at the next meeting.
Do you want me to scope out some candidates? You know there's willing participants.
I don't trust them, and if we start just letting anyone in, it's going to lead to a coup. But the Constitution states we need at least another member on board.
I stand up, heading into the bathroom and throwing my cigarette butt into the toilet. How about this? I offer. I'll scope out some possibilities for you to consider. And in the meantime, I'll pay a visit to Hallman and let him know his membership has been rescinded.
Fine.
Damon replies, holding out his cigarette butt to me. I take it, flushing them both. See? This is what you have me for, I grin. Your right-hand man to save the day. Well, I'll leave you to it. I have some visits to make. It takes me almost an hour to find Hallman. The asshole isn't in any of the public spaces, and he's not allowed in his cell during free time. That's just a privilege for us. When I do find him, though, I'm surprised that I'm able to kill two birds with one stone. The motherfucker is in the infirmary, nursing a bandaged hand, while that docile Dr. Markle wanders around humming to himself. Well, well, I mutter, leaning against the door at the end of his shitty hospital bed. Rough day. Hallman lifts his head off the pillow, groaning at the sight of me.
Oh, God, not now, please.
The poor thing sounds desperate, and I hold in a laugh as I turn to Humpty Dumpty. I need the room. Off you go. Dr. Markle looks at me, frowning.
I counted all of his limbs, Hawthorne.
Very good. I always knew you were smart. Now best go tend to Nurse Willa, like I know you do every Wednesday afternoon. Hallman moans as Dr. Markle reluctantly leaves the two of us alone together. I walk over, sitting down rather bouncy-like next to Hallman's bandaged hand. The movement sends a shot of pain through him, making him cry out. There, there, I say, soothingly patting his forehead. Tell Dr. Gray what happened.
As if you don't already know.
He spits out beads of sweat on his forehead. I glance at his IV stand, laughing that he's just on liquid Tylenol. I guess that's what happens when you're an opioid addict who smashed his car through a busy shopping mall. Even in pain, there's no relief now. We need to use our big words, I coach him. Just try to poke them out. Hallman peers through semi-closed eyes at me, his lips pursed so tightly that they're starting to go blue.
My finger got cut off.
Yes, and? I wave my hand impatiently. I'm already aware of this fact. I'm assuming you didn't do it yourself.
What?
He yelps, grabbing his arm.
Why would I do it on purpose?
I shrug. You could be trying to seduce someone. Hallman splutters, bewildered.
I'm dating Vivian. I'm not trying to impress anyone.
I tap my chin with my finger. So, who cut it off? He looks away, jaw twitching. I snort, running my hand through my hair. Aw, have you been sworn to secrecy? It must be someone really big and scary for you not to be ratting them out.
I'm not saying anything. Let's just forget it.
He mumbles. I stand up, digging into my pocket. I pull out the tiny, clear bag, watching as his greedy eyes hone in on the singular white pill inside. Tell you what, I'm in a generous mood today. You give me the name, and I'll let you have this delicious painkiller. Hallman's face writhes in pain as he mentally battles his addiction and safety. Finally, he shakes his head painfully, signaling no. Suit yourself, I shrug, pocketing it. His eyes widen in panic as he watches it disappear from sight. Also, I have a message from Damon. He stills, fear on his face again. I deliberately wait, drawing up my words to create a sense of panic. Your membership is temporarily rescinded. That goes for anyone in your little group. But if you behave and never back, you might be allowed back in. Tears silently escape the corners of his eyes, and I roll my eyes. This cocksucker is going to be the death of me. Patting my pocket, I shove my thumb towards the door. Well, I'm off. Speedy recovery.
Wait!
He calls out as I step foot into the corridor.
It was...
I look over my shoulder. Yes. He scrunches up his face tightly, swallowing hard.
It was Ashwood.
I spin around, unsure if I heard him correctly. Come again. Hallman lets out a painful groan, mentally wondering if he chose the lesser evil.
The person who did this... It was him.
Who? I order, needing absolute confirmation. He looks at my pocket. The demon's obviously winning.
It was Theo Ashwood.
Theo Ashwood. Well, that wasn't on my bingo card for this week. Interesting. I nod slowly, keeping my face blank. I reach into my pocket, watching his gluttonous little eyes gobble up the packet. I throw it to him, laughing at his miraculous movement once again. Carpet goldfish indeed. Thanks, Sam. And remember, you owe me one. Shortly after my visit to Fish Boy, I grab an access card from Charmaine to the girls' ward. She's my favorite teacher by far. She may have scolded me when I asked for it, but nevertheless, I twirl the plastic black card between my fingers as I head down the corridor of the Eastwood Wing. Stepping outside of room 213, I scan the card, punching in the access code. Can you believe these dimwits use Lily Emerson Dale's birth year as the damn code? Talk about originality. When I push open the door, I immediately breathe in the smell. It's just like every other shit room here except this one, also has the faint smell of Avery. The room is completely bland, and I shake my head. This won't do. We need to brighten this up soon. I lift the end of her mattress up, spotting the blood-soaked maroon toilet paper. I grab it up, unwrapping the cheap, hardened paper. Well, she wasn't kidding. It's a finger. But what she failed to mention was that it's in a flower. That's a nice touch. I never pegged Theo as a romantic type, but I guess even he has a heart. I've never seen them interact outside of mealtimes, and even then he ignores her. But he's allowed her to sit with him at mealtimes, which is a big deal. In all the years Theo has been here, I've never seen him do that. Once a newbie tried to sit with him and he threw a fork at his face from across the table. No one ever attempted it again. Until Avery. She's full of surprises. I don't think she realizes her power and her aura. She seems to think she's some broken little soul. But she's much more than that. We're all broken, but there's something different about her. And if I'm not the only one to notice, then I'm going to have blood on my hands.
Chapter 11. Avery. When I walk into my room after free time, I'm delighted to see everything is still in the same place. Yet I can't help but feel like something is different. There's no gifts on my desk. No random flowers decorating my room, but it just feels different. Call it a hunch, but I decide to check under the mattress. I have no idea if Gray is going to be true to his word and help me, but he's growing on me, like a poisonous weed, but growing. I lift the mattress, blinking once, then twice, realizing that the bloody bunch of flesh and decaying flower has vanished. A moment of panic sweeps me as I worry that someone else has found my little stash. It's fine, I mutter to myself, putting the mattress down and sitting on the edge. It's fine. When dinner time rolls around, I skip the food line and head straight to Gray, who's sitting at a table with Damon, and the guy who does the random free time announcements. He looks up as I approach, grinning from ear to ear.
Little killer, are you coming to sit with me?
I don't miss the deadly glare Damon shoots him, and I quickly shake my head. I just wanted to say thank you, I mumble quietly, aware of prying eyes. Gray nods.
You're welcome. I took out the trash.
Breathing a sigh of relief, a real smile crosses my face. He notices immediately, beaming at me. I quickly drop it, swallowing as Damon glares at me. Well, thanks again, I say quickly, turning on my heel and joining the end of the line of people queuing for food. I can still feel eyes burning into my back, and I dare a glance over my shoulder, spotting Gray grinning at me. I give a quick smile back, looking away before Damon chops my head off. When I reach the buffet counter, I'm surprised to find a decent-looking helping of mac and cheese. I spoon a generous helping onto my tray before heading straight to Theo's table. Suddenly, I feel like I'm in a good mood, knowing my little problem has been taken care of. So when I spot Theo digging into mac and cheese as well, I sit down, looking over at him. Looks pretty decent today, eh? Theo stills, peering up at me with dark eyes. He slowly looks at my tray before scanning my face.
It's just fucking pasta and cheese,
he says in a low tone. Yeah, but it's not moldy today and seems edible, I reply sheepishly, regretting my happy mood. Theo stays quiet for a few seconds before stabbing his fork into the pile of mac and cheese.
I suppose I'd kill for a pizza, though.
My eyebrows shoot up in surprise. It's the most I've heard him say, other than the first day we ran into each other and he told me to watch where I was going. Pizza would be nice, I reply casually, shoveling a mouthful in. Hawaiian with a barbecue base. Theo raises an eyebrow, likely contemplating my death and his decision to let me sit here. Today might be the day I get yeeted after all.
You like pineapple on pizza?
I nod. Yeah?
Disgusting.
I snort, alerting several people nearby. Theo looks up again, face blank. I quickly wave my hand like a white flag, showing I mean no harm. I guess the world is split into two people, the pineapple pizza lovers and the others. Theo puts his fork down, crossing his arms as he straightens up. Oh, fuck. This is it? I'm dead. Nervously, I glance out of my peripheral vision for the guards, wondering if they are quick enough to intervene once he stabs me. I'll go, I mutter quickly, reaching for my tray.
Stay.
I freeze, fighting every instinct in my body to run. I'm eerily aware most of the room is watching our interaction, probably just as shocked as I am that the resident psycho is engaging in conversation. I peer off to my right, spotting Gray watching us. What's worse is Damon is watching too, his face stern as he observes us.
Ignore them,
Theo says coldly.
Ignore all of them.
It's a little hard, I mutter under my breath so no one else except Theo can hear. Theo snorts.
Do I scare you, Avery?
My back straightens, my body on edge. Yes, I finally admit, not even surprised that he knows my name. Everyone seems to know everything and everyone here.
And yet you're still sitting here.
It's an observation, not a question. I shrug, playing with a piece of stray hair that frames my face. I used to do it all the time as a kid when I was nervous. That, and I used to suck the ends for some reason. At least I've kind of grown. I figured if you didn't want me sitting here, you'd tell me. Theo nods once.
That's true. You've got guts, I'll give you that.
I don't think so, I mumble sadly. I just wasn't welcome anywhere else, and I enjoy the quiet here.
And today you're awfully chatty,
Theo points out, carefully scanning my face with his dark eyes. I give a small nod. I was in a good mood. A problem fixed itself, kinda.
Problems never just go away. People take care of problems.
Yeah, I agree, glancing briefly over at Gray. They do. A sinister smirk falls over his face, putting me on alert again. He smirks at me, dropping his fork on the now empty tray.
Sometimes the best way to deal with problems is to cut them off.
I'm horribly aware of how every nerve in my body freezes, a chill rushing through me. My mouth drops open slightly as I look at him, taking in his expression. With clockwise timing, Theo stands up, grabbing his tray as the siren rings out to signal the end of mealtime. Without a backwards glance, he discards his tray and walks over to the awaiting guards, disappearing from sight out the doors. I can't move. I can't even breathe. It never even dawned on me that Theo could be the one who was in my room. Why would I assume it was him? Yeah, I know of his reputation, but when you have people like Damon and Gray lurking around, it's easy to presume you know what's going on. Turns out, I know nothing at all. Because if I'm reading between the very obvious lines here, it isn't Gray I need to be concerned about. It's Theo.
You're awfully jumpy today,
Gray says from the desk beside me. I jolt, trying to refocus on the worksheet Charmaine has handed us. I didn't sleep much last night, I mutter quietly, leaning on my elbow. Not surprising, since I'm surrounded by fucking psychos. Gray shuffles his desk closer to mine, not at all bothered by the squeaking sounds it makes on the floor. Charmaine looks up, giving us a scolding look, but doesn't say anything. I'm quickly realizing that she is the most unteacher teacher I've ever seen in my life. Either she loves her job here because it gives good benefits and excellent pay, or she just doesn't give a shit at all. Don't get me wrong, she seems to care somewhat about our education. But the shit she turns a blind eye to is piling up by the day.
Psychos, you say? Tell me more.
Gray says dreamily, tapping his fingers on the edge of my desk. Will you please just give me space? I snap quietly. I'm not in the mood. Gray pouts at me, throwing carefully perfected puppy dog eyes at me.
I'm hurt, babe. Do you need a session with Dr. Smith?
I look at his hand on my desk, contemplating stabbing him after all. He notices, wiggling his fingers at me.
Go on, do it. I'm bored out of my mind here. Give me some entertainment.
I shove his hand off my desk, cringing as he laughs. At least tell me the library will be vacant during free time, I snipe at him. Gray nods, propping his head on his hand, elbow digging into the desk.
Why, yes, it will be free today.
Good. He doesn't say anything further, and I somehow manage to get some work done before we're collected by the Men in Black. I wait for my super secretive Group 3 number before heading straight to the library, relieved to find it empty as promised. Call me a glutton for punishment, but I take refuge in the same aisle, sitting on the floor with my back against the wall. I close my eyes, dissociating from my surroundings as I enjoy the quiet time. It's short-lived, though, as I hear the library door open quietly. You've got to be fucking kidding me, I mutter to myself, opening my eyes as I try to peer through the shelves. I let out a growl as Gray appears at the end of the aisle, grinning as he spots me on the floor.
You didn't even attempt to hide today,
he points out, leaning against the shelf. I shrug. The door was so quiet, it didn't nearly fly off the hinges with scary businessmen.
Oof. Do you think I'm a scary businessman?
He teases, walking towards me. Scary, yes. Businessman, no. Gray stops when he reaches my feet, sitting on the floor in front of me, cross-legged.
But you think I'm scary? Like a guard dog?
I think you're a psychopath who takes delight in people's pain, and your own.
You know me so well, little killer.
He grins, grabbing his chest.
It's like we're best friends.
I roll my eyes. We're not best friends.
Business associates. You do owe me a favor, after all.
Tensing up, I scan him nervously. Are you here to collect or something? Gray pauses, contemplating my words.
No, not today. But I am interested in playing a game.
A game? I laugh. I spy?
How about 20 questions?
He asks, shuffling over so his back is against one of the shelves and his legs are spread out, blocking me in. I shake my head. I was taught to never give up personal information willingly.
You're taught well. But I promise I don't bite. I'll even let you ask the first question.
Curiosity takes over, and judging by the smirk on his face, he knows I'm chomping at the bit to ask the most obvious question. I can't help myself. The words spilling from my mouth before I realize it's too late. Did you get rid of the finger from my room? Gray grins, tilting his head back against the books.
I did. It's gone.
Good, I say, relieved to finally be sure.
My turn,
he replies, making my stomach churn.
What's your favorite color?
I snap my neck up, taken aback by his question. My favorite color? You're not going to ask me something more in depth.
It's only the first question, little killer. Calm down. I like to build my way up to things. Take my time.
That's not reassuring, I mumble. I don't really have a favorite color. Purple, I guess? Paige once made me a purple friendship bracelet. It was made out of a shoelace and some beads which didn't spell anything. But it was still one of the best presents I had ever received. I cherished the fuck out of it. Until my father upturned my bedroom one day in a fit of rage. He found it stashed under my mattress and promptly broke it with his bare hands before flinging the beads at my head. Gray nods, smiling to himself.
Nice color. I prefer red, though.
I'm not even going to ask why, I mutter. Where did you get the scar from? I take him by surprise, his eyes looking over at me, impressed I have the audacity to ask such a personal question. But I might as well satisfy my curiosity. I've come this far.
On my neck?
He asks casually, pointing to the faint red scar that lines his throat.
My father slit my throat during one of his schizophrenic hallucinations. He thought I was the man my mother left him for.
A look of horror crosses my face, making Gray laugh.
Yeah, that's usually the look I get when I tell the story. It's fine, though.
It's not fine, I stutter. Then why are you in here and not him? Gray smiles at me.
Bit hard to be in here when you're dead. Now I believe it's my turn. Why did you flinch when I touched your leg the other day?
Chapter 12. Avery. They say that everyone has strengths and weaknesses. For me, my strength has always been the ability to run away and escape when I need to. Maybe that's just survival from my upbringing, but it's a strength I consider paramount to my stay here. I managed to ditch Gray in the library without answering his question, and even avoided dinner so I wouldn't cross paths with him or Theo. One day without crappy food won't kill me. Probably the opposite. Sadly, the one thing I can't run from here is these damn professional appointments. I'm holed up in Dr. Smith's office, doing my best to avoid confronting questions, but at the same time, he possibly has answers for me. I just don't know how to ask the questions without digging myself into an even bigger hole.
Anything on your mind today?
He asks casually, tapping his pen on the notepad. I shake my head. Nope.
How are you feeling about Lilydale now?
Fine, I mutter, staring at a spot on the carpet. Everything about this place is so pristine, so it's easy to spot when something is out of place. Dr. Smith doesn't miss a beat, following my trail of vision.
Ah, that. Someone tried to grab my envelope opener.
My brows crease. And tried to kill themselves? Is it a bloodstain? He nods unfazed.
Sure is. You have no idea how much of a pain it is trying to remove it from cream carpet. I think the foundation is putting an order in to replace the carpet.
Of course, I agree sarcastically. Because what else would you spend the money on? Certainly not the quality of the food here. Gotta keep those offices in perfect shape. Dr. Smith smiles at me.
If you could change anything about the food, what would it be? Better yet, what would you like to see on the menu?
Anything edible? Pizza or something homey like Sloppy Joe's? I don't want to live on raw pasta and gray meat forever. He makes a note on his pad, and I'm curious if he's making observations about me or the actual food suggestions. God, wouldn't that be a miracle? There's no way they take us seriously, though. We're just the ruse in their charity scheme.
Have you made any friends? Or anyone to confide in?
I go rigid. Unsure how to answer that. I don't want to say yes and be associated with anyone. But if I say no, it just confirms I'm a nutcase who's antisocial. Before I can decide which direction to take, Dr. Smith interjects my thoughts happily.
It's okay to like people, even if you worry other people might not like them.
Who said anything about what other people think? I say, confronting him. He laughs quietly.
I'm sure you've always been one to worry about image. Not in a vanity sense, but rather any actions could show flaws or imperfections.
Sounds like vanity, I point out.
Not necessarily. People with BPD often have a self-sense of perfectionism, trying to please others. Did you ever feel the need to try to show your father that you were worth more than he made you believe you were?
I cross my arms, my face going hard. I refuse to talk about my father, not now or ever, to anyone.
Right. How about we reframe the question and circle back? Are you familiar with the term favorite person?
I scan his face wearily, shaking my head. Like a best friend?
Kind of. Rather an attachment of sorts. Someone you hold and value above others that you feel drawn to and want to confide in. But at the same time, worry you'll disappoint them. Often there's a fear that the favorite person will leave, triggering abandonment fears.
I don't think so, I mutter quietly. I've only had one good friend and they left, so I don't have anyone to worry about leaving. Dr. Smith looks at me, surprised that I've revealed a fragment of vulnerability.
But is the reason you don't have to worry because you won't let anyone in?
I let people in, I argue hostily.
Do you? Can you give me an example?
I frown, annoyed that he's backed me into an imaginary corner. I asked someone recently to help me with a task. It was quite a sensitive matter. See, I trust people. He tilts his head, smiling.
I didn't say anything about trust. Do you trust this person?
Laughing out loud, I don't vocalize my thoughts. Do I trust Gray? As much as I could throw him. I don't trust him, even though I just said I did. But I don't, though. Do I? No, definitely not, I decide, clearing my throat. Trust is a strong word. This person somewhat offered assistance, and I felt limited to my choices. So yes, I took them up on their offer. I'm careful with my words, unsure just how much the staff know about what goes on behind closed doors. Dr. Smith's jaw twitches, almost with a sense of victory, and I start to panic, wondering if I've given too much away.
Well, while having a favorite person can be intense, there's nothing wrong with expanding your network here. It's okay to open up to people. It might even help to heal some of those traumatic insecurities.
You make it sound like a business transaction rather than human beings, I gripe at him. He laughs softly.
Social transactions come in all shapes and sizes, Avery. But you have a real opportunity here to grow and heal. You may not believe it, but it's true. Humans need basic essentials to survive. One of the key ones is social interactions. Even the most recluse people need comfort from others at times. There's nothing wrong with wanting a friend or to be loved. I can understand that someone in your situation would have a hard time moving forward. But I want you to consider the idea that engaging with people doesn't have to have any transactional benefits. You can just have friends.
I burst out laughing, not even bothering to muffle the sound. I almost sound insane. But the fact that Gray treated me like a business transaction, telling me I owe him one, just highlights my beliefs. And don't even get me started on Theo. He literally mutilated someone because of me. How on earth would I be able to see that as a friendly interaction? Friends don't just hurt other people for the sake of it. Not to mention, he obviously took pleasure in it. He's sick and twisted. Sure, whatever you say, I tell Dr. Smith, standing up as the guard opens the office door. Thanks for the laugh.
You can't hide from me forever,
Gray whispers in a sing-song voice from his desk. I'm not hiding, I say confidently, ignoring him unsuccessfully. I just don't want to play games, Gray snorts.
Is this because I asked about your prudish reaction?
I grind my teeth in anger. I know he's trying to get me to react, but I'm not going to give him the satisfaction. When I've composed myself, I look at him with an air of sass. Not everyone wants you, Gray. I hate to break it to you, but I'm not interested. I have no idea what has come over me to poke the bear. One minute, I'm terrified of him. The next, I'm provoking him, fighting fire with fire. I can't explain it, but despite everything, in my gut, I truly believe he won't hurt me. Not unless I give him a reason to.
Oh, babe, you're so cute when you're mad.
I'm rethinking the whole stabbing him thing. But I just let out an annoyed breath, focusing on Charmaine. Surprisingly, Gray doesn't bother to try to talk to me for the rest of class. When the siren bell thing rings, I stalk past him, pretending he doesn't exist. On the outside, I look calm and composed. But inside, I'm shitting myself. It's free time, and I have no idea where to go. The library seems like a bad idea in case Gray follows me in, or worse, I walk in on some meeting. The courtyard makes me want to gouge my eyes out, and I'd rather be dead than hang in the hall in the open space. I decide to wander around, checking out the vacant rooms. Most of them aren't occupied, the sun calling people to the courtyard. When I get to the last room, I'm nearly barreled over by someone being yeeted from inside. The little scrawny red-haired guy smacks into the adjacent wall, scrambling to his feet and darting off before I can finish asking if he's okay. Against my better judgment, I slowly peek around the corner into the room to find out what happened.
Seriously? Don't you see enough of me during mealtimes?
Theo grunts out annoyed. My eyes widen and I freeze in place, mentally talking myself up. I try to tell myself maybe he didn't see me and I can quickly leave. But I'm a dickhead,